The Church's Music from the 20th Century. The 17th Century. The 11th Century. The 8th Century. The 4th Century. The best of the Church's music from the past 2,000 years. LutheranPublicRadio.org.
No matter what we choose to believe, there's no God who condones taking the life of an innocent human being.
Where I think we are in the culture, but also with religious institutions, is that people have stopped hating us, that is to say LGBT people, but they're not yet ready to celebrate us. That's the next big work to do.
Maybe it's something as simple as you whistle while you work.
Just whistle while you work.
Mega churches are a house of cards. Mega churches really are the primary example of what's wrong with evangelicalism, why it's so thin, so insubstantial, so unsatisfying.
Southern Illinois truck drivers, love issues, etc.
Argument, for some reason, has taken on a negative connotation, especially among Christians. It's considered rude, uncouth, maybe even unchristian to mount an argument, to engage in argument. But I think the two go together, thinking and argument. Maybe argument is so unpopular among Christians nowadays because thinking is so unpopular among Christians. It's hard to say, but the church did well to learn how to argue, not only outside but inside, and therefore how to think carefully, really how to use our reason in that best sense, in those things beneath us. Maybe we need it back, this art of argumentation. Greetings and welcome to Issues Etc. live this Monday afternoon. It's the 2nd of July. I'm Todd Wilkin. Thanks for tuning us in. Greg Kokel will join us. We're going to talk about good arguments and bad arguments. They come in both varieties. That'll take up the first half hour. We'll spend the next half hour with Deaconess Pam Nielsen. We'll talk about Naaman's servant girl, continuing a Sunday school lesson with her. Casey Luskin, a researcher for the Discovery Institute, will join us in the second hour. We're going to talk about a campaign to convince Christians to accept neo-Darwinism. Then we'll round off today's program with Terry Mattingly of Scripps Howard News Service, talking about poll results on the faith of President Obama. You can join us for the next 2 hours. Our call-in number, 1-877-623-6943, 877-623-MYIE. Send us an email here in the studio, talkback@issuesetc.org, or a tweet @IssuesETC. Greg Kokel is a regular guest. He's founder of Stand to Reason, based in Signal Hill, California, author of the book Tactics, A Game Plan for Discussing Your Christian Convictions. And he's also written an article in the latest Solid Ground newsletter titled, I'd Like to Have an Argument, Please. Greg, welcome back.
Todd, it's good to talk to you again. I had to chuckle because that title, of course, you know, comes from an old Monty Python skit, and I couldn't pass up the opportunity to title my article with that line.
Why is it that Christians need to learn again, or maybe even for the first time, the art of sound argument?
Well, God has given us a tool, and that is reason. And he's given it to us so that we can divide truth from fiction, and we can find out what the truth is about matters, because many a time that distinction does matter. It matters in our physical life, and it matters certainly in our spiritual life. And argument is the way reason is put together to come to conclusions that are sound, that is, that are reliable. And if you do not use argument well, and here, just so the listeners understand, I'm not talking about a fight, and I'm not talking about a quarrel. I'm talking about a very specific kind of thing that careful thinkers have used for ages, from the beginning actually, to figure out what's true about the world. And if we use those things right, we not only will be able to come to better conclusions, more accurate conclusions ourselves as Christians, but we can also help oppose the objections that others offer in challenge to Christianity.
You use the analogy of a house.
Yeah.
And to understand the basic form, if you will, of an argument.
Right.
Lay that out for us.
Yeah, an argument is like a simple house. It's a picture of a roof supported by walls. The roof is the conclusion. The walls are the supporting ideas. It's that simple. In the lingo of logic, the walls are called premises. The structure of the building is called a syllogism. The idea of a syllogism is you have a couple of lines of evidence that lead to your conclusion. And many people are familiar with kind of a textbook example. All men are mortal. Socrates is a man. Therefore, Socrates is mortal. I mean, it's a very straightforward series of statements that, if taken to be true, lead to the conclusion in question. And the task of critical thinking there, as opposed to just thinking in general, because thinking could just be reflection on all kinds of things, critical thinking is the task of thinking in which you're attempting to figure out whether a claim is true or not. And the way you go about it is to look whether at the argument proper to see if there's an argument there, and if the argument is there, then are there walls supporting the roof, or is the roof just kind of sitting out there on the ground all by itself? And are the walls strong enough to support the roof? That is, are the reasons adequate to reach the conclusion in question?
So, what often passes for or is laid out as argument, you say, is often merely just a roof sitting on the ground. It's an assertion or a conclusion with no reasons given.
Yeah, you know, this happens so often, Todd, and I was listening to some of the clips there in the opening, and of course, now's the political season, so you can hear all kinds of examples of this. People just saying things they think are true. And the general feeling is if you just make a statement and you say it with enough force or aggression or confidence, then it kind of almost makes the statement true. You just take it to be true. But really, that's just like building a roof on the ground, you know. Somebody says, well, everything's relative. Well, they're just dismissing Christianity, the objective truth of Christianity, because, after all, everything's relative. Or God is just an invention of man, so he feels better. You know, God is just a crutch. Well, that might be an interesting place to start in a discussion, but you can't end there, because all that is a point of view. It's not an argument. In fact, sometimes people ask me, how do I answer that argument? God is just a crutch. I said, it's not an argument. It may be true. But it's not an argument, because an argument is not just a statement, a conclusion, if you will, but rather it is a conclusion that is concluded from prior evidence. If somebody just drops a roof on your head by making the kinds of statements that I've just offered, they're not giving an argument. It's fair to be able to say, okay, I think I understand your point. Now I want to know, what are your reasons for that point of view? How did you come to that conclusion? That's the next step. And that's a request to build some walls to see if the roof is actually supported by something, or people are just spewing things out because they feel like it. That's an important step.
You write about how arguments can go bad, and this really is to that critical thinking task where you hear something and you say, okay, now I do have an argument on my hands. Now I do have someone who's set forth several premises and they've drawn a conclusion. You say the first way that an argument can go wrong is in its form. Take us through that.
Yeah, I mentioned a classical argument just a few moments ago. All men are mortal. Socrates is a man, therefore Socrates is mortal. Now, I think anybody reflecting on that common illustration, or another one similar to it, if it's raining outside, then the streets are wet, but the streets are not wet, therefore it's not raining outside. Anybody can reflect on those things and see that the conclusion seems to follow naturally from the premises or the statements that are made before it. If it's true that all men are mortal, and if it's true that Socrates is a man, well, then by golly, Socrates would be mortal, wouldn't he? And that's a proper form. And there are different kinds of arguments. The second example I gave, if it's raining outside, then the streets are wet. The streets are not wet, therefore it's not raining outside, is a little different construction. But I think with a moment's reflection, you could see, well, that seems to follow as well. That is, that the conclusion that a person draws follows appropriately from the evidence he's given, if the evidence is sound, if the statements themselves are accurate. And sometimes, though, the form isn't accurate. I gave one example in the article. All men are cheerful. Jane is not a man. Therefore, Jane is not cheerful. Well, wait a minute. Even if the statements were true, even if it's true that all men are cheerful and that Jane is not a man, well, it wouldn't follow from that Jane isn't cheerful. Jane is a woman. She could be cheerful anyway. Even if all men are cheerful, it doesn't say that women aren't. That's not part of the evidence. And so with a little reflection there, you can see that there's something wrong in the form of the argument. There's what's called a non sequitur. That is, it doesn't follow. It's just a Latin word that means it doesn't follow. There's a fallacy here. And, you know, it's amazing how if we're just willing to ask, what is the point of view? That is, what is the conclusion? And then what are the reasons for the point of view? It's actually not hard when you get it right out in front of you, in many cases, to see that the conclusion is not going to follow from the premises, even if the premises are true. The big trick is to get it out in front of you, out visible for everybody else, so you can make that assessment.
Greg Kokel is our guest. When we come back, we've talked about where the argument, the conclusion, does not follow from the premises. What if the premises, what if the statements that are made in the course of an argument are themselves not true? And that is, the claims that are made that should lead to a conclusion, if they are not necessarily true, how do we evaluate such an argument? We'll also talk about equivocation as another weakness that is often found in bad arguments. We're talking good arguments and bad arguments with Greg Kokel, founder of Stand to Reason, based in Signal Hill, California, author of the book Tactics, A Game Plan for Discussing Your Christian Convictions. And he's also written an article in the latest Solid Ground newsletter titled, I'd Like to Have an Argument, Please. Our call-in number on this Monday afternoon, 1-877-623-6943. 877-623-MY-I-E. Send us an email right here in the studio, talkback@issuesetc.org, or a tweet @issuesetc. More with Greg Kokel on good and bad arguments after this.
Hi, this is Jonathan Collin from France.
Thanks to God's gift of the Internet, people are listening to Issues Etc. around the world.
First, I would like to say thank you very much for your program. It very much ministers to those of us who are outside the comforts and the luxuries of having a confessional Lutheran congregation nearby. Thank you very much for this great resource.
Listen to what you want, when you want, wherever you are. IssuesETC.org.
I'm not a Christian, but I listen to your show because actually you do have some interesting topics.
Here's a recent comment from the Issues Etc. comment line.
You believe that there's not one error in the Bible. That's intellectually infantile. You also believe that Jesus is coming again. You promote extremely sexually repressive views.
The Issues Etc. comment line. Available 24/7. 618-223-8382.
Have fun waiting for Jesus to return. Got news for you. He ain't coming back.
Talk radio for the thinking Christian. You're listening to Issues Etc.
Over summer, 2.5 months of what a child learned in school can leak away. Call Sylvan to turn summer learning loss into a gain. Sylvan pinpoints exactly what skills your child needs in just 3 hours a week over 12 weeks. You'll see results in your child's math or reading performance improving one grade level guaranteed. Demonstrated through the pre and post assessment. So call now. At participating locations only. Some restrictions may apply. Call for complete guarantee details.
Sylvan Learning Center of Edwardsville, 618-656-0500. 656-0500.
Wouldn't it be great if more of your fellow parishioners listened to Issues Etc.? Well, here's an easy way for you to publicize Issues Etc. at your church. Go to the support page of our website, issuesetc.org, and you'll find a short paragraph to include in your weekly church bulletin. Copy and paste the text for your church secretary or pastor to include each week in the Sunday bulletin. The bulletin blurb is updated weekly. Issuesetc.org. Stay connected. Issuesetc.org.
Welcome back. I'm Todd Wilkin. This is Issues Etc. It's Monday afternoon, July the 2nd. Greg Kokel is our guest. We're talking about good arguments and bad arguments. Before the break, you were talking about the form failing and therefore the argument failing. You say that even when the form is right, an argument can still be invalid because of the claims. What do you mean?
That's right. Well, just a quick observation. During the break, you had a guy say, I've got news for you. Jesus ain't coming back. Well, he was dropping a roof on our heads. In other words, he was just giving a point of view, but if he didn't give any reasons why he thought that was the case, then he gave no argument. I just wanted to draw attention to that. There it is in play. When the form is correct, we say an argument is valid, but just because it's valid doesn't mean that the conclusion is true. It just means that the conclusion follows properly from the premises. Let me give you an example. All unicorns live in Ireland. Pegasus is a unicorn. Therefore, Pegasus lives in Ireland. Well, that form is valid. I mean, the conclusion follows from the premises, but just because you say the argument is valid at that point doesn't at the same time commit you to the existence of unicorns or tell you anything about where they live. I mean, that the factual questions about unicorns is a separate issue. So if the argument is valid, that is, the conclusion follows from the statements before the evidence, then you have to ask the question, well, wait a minute, is the evidence itself sound? Is it true that all unicorns live in Ireland? Is it true that Pegasus is a unicorn? If it turns out that neither of those statements or even one of those statements is not true, then the argument is still going to fail. Even if the form is right, the facts are wrong. Let me give you an example that comes up quite a bit. And it's the point of view that Jesus is a myth because he's a dying and rising Savior, and there are ancient myths before the time of Jesus that are like dying and rising messiahs, redeemers as well. So Jesus is just another myth. Now, this comes up all the time, and I hear it from educated people, atheists, skeptics alike. And there's a flaw in this argument. There's a problem here, because when you put the argument in its proper form, to take a closer look at it, it would look something like this. When an alleged historical account is similar to a myth that came before it, then the later account is also a myth. And second, there are ancient myths of dying and rising redeemers that are remarkably similar to Jesus, so therefore the Jesus story is also a myth. Well, that's actually a valid argument. In other words, if the statements, premises are true, the conclusion follows. The problem with this argument is that neither of these statements are true. It isn't the case that when you have an historical account that's similar to a myth that came before it, that then the so-called historical account is a myth too. I mean, there was a story that was unbelievably similar to the what turned out to be the sinking of the Titanic something like 12 years later when it actually sunk about 100 years ago. This story was a complete fabrication. The ship was even called the Titan, for goodness sake. It was an uncanny resemblance to the historical event that happened 12 years later. But that doesn't mean that the historical event that happened 12 years later didn't happen just because there was a myth like it that was before. So this is a liability of that whole line of argument. The form might be valid, but the facts are not facts at all. They're false, so the argument fails.
You say that there's a third way that an argument can fail, and that's in its terms, the definition of terms, I would say. And the example that you bring forward comes from a Jehovah's Witness caller to your radio program.
Yeah. He threw me for a loop once with his argument, and it was before I'd actually thought through some of these ideas. How does an argument go bad? Through its form, through its facts, and also through its terms, and that I hadn't thought about. Here's what he said. He said, okay, you guys believe in the Trinity. Jesus is God, right? I said, yeah, okay, Jesus is God, yeah. God is a Trinity, right. Therefore, Jesus is a Trinity. Well, It seemed valid in its form. If Jesus is God and God is a Trinity, therefore Jesus is in a Trinity. Is a Trinity. Like if A equals B and B equals C, then A equals C. It's a transitive relationship. And in the facts, I agreed to Jesus was God and God is a Trinity, but Jesus is not a Trinity. Something was wrong. As it turns out, this argument that he offered traded on the simple word is, as if the word is in the statement Jesus is God was the same kind of is as God is a Trinity. And it turns out that's not the case. The terms are used differently in the different premises. This created the confusion, and it was hard to fix, at least initially. I had to go home and think about it a little bit, but next week I came back. Yes, Jesus is God, not in the sense that he is identical to God. He isn't exactly the same thing that God is. He has the essential characteristic of divinity, just as the Father has the essential characteristic of divinity and the Spirit. And once you straighten that out, Jesus has the essential qualities of God. God is identical to the Trinity. Well, then it's clear then Jesus is a Trinity is a false conclusion. That straightened it out. And there are lots of occasions where this comes up in common parlance. I was listening to an argument about vouchers, and somebody said, well, he was against vouchers, school vouchers, and he said public money for public education. Well, that sounded like it made sense at first, until you realize that he was using the word public in a different way in each sentence. In the first case, he was using the word public to mean public that is from the people. In the second case, that he was using the word public in the sense of government. So he was just simply making the assertion the people's education has to be done by the government. But of course, that needs a defense. How about this? If you use it the same way in both cases, how about you putting it this way? The people's money should pay for the people's education. Well, in that case, it seems like vouchers make sense, because when the people pay their taxes, they should be able to use their tax money for their own education, whether it's in a public school or in a private school. So there's an example about where confusion on the terms pops up in a policy issue, and sometimes that confusion can cloud the issue immensely.
Now, we talked earlier about arguments that aren't. They're just assertions.
That's right.
Then there are what may sound like assertions, but you realize they are really assuming various things. They are arguments, but not all of the parts of the argument are explicitly stated.
That's right. Like if I told you, Todd, I said, answer the phone, it's ringing. Well, there's no subject in that sentence. I'm speaking to you, so it's understood that I mean Todd, answer the phone, or you answer the phone. So we shorten things for simplicity's sake. And sometimes there are arguments that are like that. We don't say all of the steps because we assume people understand the steps. Now, here's one like that. Somebody might say, well, Jesus never condemned homosexuality. And let's just say that that's true. He never did condemn homosexuality. They are implying a conclusion. Then homosexuality must be okay if Jesus never condemned it. But they're missing a premise that they're simply assuming that we understand but hasn't been stated. And if you state the missing premise, then you realize there's something wrong with the argument. I call this a hidden wall or an invisible wall. So what is that invisible wall? In order for this point of view, this argument to go forward, you have to have another premise in there, and that is whatever Jesus did not speak against, he approves of. Jesus did not speak against homosexuality. Therefore, Jesus approves of homosexuality. Now, that's a valid argument. But once you bring that first premise up and make it obvious so everybody can see, you realize, well, that's not true. It doesn't seem to be the case that just because Jesus did not explicitly disapprove of it, then he approves of it. For goodness sake, he didn't disapprove of wife beating or gay bashing or slavery or a whole host of other vices that he might have been against. So it isn't the case that just because he didn't disapprove of it, then he approves of it. And when you take that hidden premise and you make it clear, then you can ask, is this what you really mean? Do you mean that just because he didn't approve of it, that he does approve of it? I'm sorry, did you mean that just because he didn't disapprove of it, that he actually approves of it? Now, this can't be defended. And when you bring that hidden or invisible wall out into the open, then people can see it, and their point of view just falls right to the ground, especially this one.
With only about a minute here, Greg, make the case that we not only need this, this is something that we're going to have to use in the course of dealing with all sorts of issues, this the art of good argument, but that it's not just a necessary evil. This is something that, as you said at the beginning, God has given us a gift, a reason, and he intends for it to be used in this way to arrive at truth.
Yeah, right. Well, it can't be a necessary evil because Jesus and Paul used them all the time. And I just tracked with somebody through Acts 17, 18, and 19. Corinth, Ephesus, Thessalonica, Paul, in each case, is reasoning and giving evidence and persuading. This is a standard biblical practice, and it's a biblical practice because it can't be avoided. We are made as creatures, as rational creatures. We're doing this all the time. The question is whether we're going to do it well and come to good conclusions, or we're going to do it poorly and come to bad conclusions. That's the issue.
Greg Kokel is founder of Stand to Reason, based in Signal Hill, California, author of the book Tactics, a game plan for discussing your Christian convictions. He's also written an article in the latest Solid Ground newsletter titled, I'd Like to Have an Argument, Please. You can find out more about Solid Ground and Stand to Reason at our website, issuesetc.org. Click Listen on Demand. Greg, thanks for your time.
All the best, Todd. Thank you.
When we come back, Deaconess Pam Nielsen will be our guest. We're spending the summer with her doing some Sunday school lessons. And in the course of those Sunday school lessons, we're focusing on vocation, the station in life, the place where God puts his people. And one of them is found in that famous story of the prophet and Naaman the Syrian leper. And someone is acting, well, a lot of people are acting within their vocation, but a particular little servant girl. We'll talk about that story from the Old Testament with Deaconess Pam Nielsen right after this.
Pastor Todd, I downloaded your Issues Etc. app for my Android phone, and I listen to it while I'm on the treadmill.
You can listen to Issues Etc. live or on demand with the new Issues Etc. Android or iPhone app. You can download these apps at our website, issuesetc.org. Issues Etc. in the palm of your hand. Download an app today.
My new Adam really enjoys the app while I'm on the treadmill.
What makes Christ Our Savior Lutheran Church in Freeburg, Illinois so special? Our new members talk about the family atmosphere, the welcoming people, and the outstanding music. But most importantly, you'll be confronted with your sin and comforted with the assurance that Jesus has removed that sin so that you can live each day as his baptized and forgiven child. Christ Our Savior Lutheran Church is at 612 North State Street in Freeburg, Illinois. Sunday worship is at 9 a.m. Sunday school and Bible classes at 10:20 a.m. Call 618-539-5664.
Does your church need a backup organist? The virtual organist service from Church Music Solutions is the next best thing to an on-site organist. Send us your musical choices, including liturgy and hymns. We'll assemble your service and send it to an iPad that controls your church's organ on Sunday. The result is genuine organ leadership on your instrument with your selections when you need it. See our videos on YouTube or visit our website at churchmusicsolutions.com.
Steadfast Lutherans, people who believe that traditional Lutheran preaching, liturgy, and hymnody continue to deliver Christ crucified for sinners today. The Reformation attempted to return the church's focus on what we do for God back to a focus on what God does for us, that Christ died for our sins in accordance with the Scriptures. Some things never change. The gospel is still under attack from inside and outside the church. To see how Lutheran doctrine and practice preserve the gospel, visit steadfastlutherans.org.
Smartest listeners in radio. You're listening to Issues Etc.
This is Life Issues with Brad Mattis, Executive Director of Life Issues Institute.
In an especially violent act, somebody firebombed a pro-life school bus used to transport children to pray in front of a Rockford, Illinois abortion mill. Two firebombs were thrown in through windows to torch it. The bus is well known around town because of its pictures of unborn babies and the message to pray to end abortion. Pro-lifers suspect the violence is in retaliation for the nearby abortion mill closing. The mill was notorious for blasphemous signage and activity toward the sidewalk counselors. So far, the local papers refused to write a story on the bus. Instead, they did an article on an incident against the abortion mill that occurred 12 years ago. It's typical behavior pro-lifers get from the Rockford media and police force. But thanks be to God, the killing center is closed.
Check out Life Issues on Facebook and stay more informed than you've ever been.